I'm an IT guy, and I have an office, and I've got some computers in there, and occasionally they break down. Who do I turn to? What do I do? Well, I could always listen to Adam the Computer Guy. He's on every Tuesday and Thursday at 9:13 at WWGH. He's got all the information that I need to help me keep my computers running just beautifully. So if you have any computer information you need, you want to keep your computers running right, and you want to get the latest news and information, listen to Adam the Computer Guy. Every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 9:13, right here on 107.1 FM, WWGH.
Why, yes, be careful what you wish for. It's 13 minutes after 9, and as Wayne has enunciated, that means it's time for the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Good Tuesday morning. It's springtime. I have spring fever, and I always have IT fever and the need to discuss it with you. Love talking about telecommunications, computers, data security, and all that good stuff. Thank you very much for listening every Tuesday and Thursday, about 12, 13 minutes after 9 a.m., right after the 9 o'clock features. We get together, talk technology topics, take your phone calls, Facebook messages, emails, and other forms of communication. Last Thursday, we had a special show with my in-studio guest, Mr. Harry Yeprum Jr., discussing the Final Four, upcoming baseball season, and other items related to technology, social networking, and the great world of sports. Harry is an excellent guest. He'll be on again via phone or Skype or in person. The best kind of guest that we have. Also wanted to thank our mutual friend and Reds fan, Zach B., for calling in. Had a great conversation. We are a user participation show, and your contributions to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show are always appreciated. You can listen to a podcast of last Thursday's show, last Tuesday's show, all of my shows at our website. Click on Show Archives at WWGH1071.com. I'll be discussing more about our fine website later, but please do visit it because it rocks. And as you probably know, yes, I toot my own horn quite often, but that's okay. I never claim to be perfect. I am the webmaster, web host, and developer and programmer for the site. Let me know what you think about it. Send me an email right here at the radio station, adam at wwgh1071.com. I feel we're adding to the website pretty much every day, and it's a fun project, and I think the station's, well, I think pretty good would be an understatement. This station is awesome. Scott Spears with his celebrity interviews. He spoke to Dear Abby earlier this month. Heloise, Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Tons of celebrity interviews available on our website. Check it out, WWGH1071.com. Okie dokie. See, I got a little excited about that. Also, from the exciting news department, last week, we mentioned that Apple was holding a somewhat secretive meeting and telling people about some new items they were debuting. And so I'm going to give you an update on that. This actually happened yesterday. On Monday, the 21st, of March, Apple announced a pair of new products in old sizes, the 4-inch iPhone SE and the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. Now, they banked on user preferences for the familiar form factors to lessen their hesitancy to upgrade. Although Apple's hour-long Loop You In event was short on surprises, it was slimmer on filler as well. Among the notable extras, Apple announced a price cut, bringing the Apple Watch to $300, along with a selection of new bands. That would be watch bands, not musical bands. It also announced support for Apple TV folders and the release of iOS 9.3. But the major news was the unveiling of the iPhone SE and the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. Now, Apple used the tagline, "Let us loop you in," on its invitations to yesterday's event. But considering just how accurate the pre-event rumors were about the new iPhone SE, few remained out of the loop. However, Apple added a few pieces to fill out the almost complete puzzle that analysts and insiders had assembled. Last year, Apple sold more than 4 million 4-inch phones. And that comes from their VP, Greg Joswiak. Some people asked for the smaller size, while others pleaded for it, said Greg Joswiak. Projected to cost between $400 and $500, it turns out that the two versions of the iPhone SE, the 16GB and the 64GB versions, are in fact $400 or $500 for the 64. Apple also confirmed that the iPhone SE will have a 64-bit A9 processor and an M9 motion coprocessor. It will provide improved battery life as well as LTE speeds that are as much as 50% faster than the iPhone 5S. Sounds like a pretty cool piece of equipment if you want my opinion. On its back, the iPhone SE carries a 12-megapixel EyeSight camera that supports 4K video at 30 frames per second and 1080 pixel video at 60 frames per second. Its FaceTime camera will be supported by Retina Flash, and that's a feature which triples the brightness of the phone's display to illuminate selfie shots. So all you selfie takers, and you know, I'm a selfie taker. I admit it. They're on my Facebook page. I often take one here at the station just to try to track my progress with all this fun radio gadgetry that we have. So with this new iPhone SE, you can triple the brightness of the display to illuminate your selfie shot and make everyone on Facebook proud and perhaps a bit jealous that you have this fine piece of electronic wizardry. Now, the iPhone SE has Touch ID, enabling it to support Apple Pay. And, of course, new microphones help it leverage always-on Hey Siri. Mr. Joswiak said, as you can see, we've added an incredible array of advanced technologies into the iPhone SE and its really compact design, which makes it the most powerful 4-inch phone ever. It really is an amazing device. Apple will begin taking pre-orders for the iPhone SE this Thursday, the 24th, and it will go on sale Thursday of next week, the 31st. Now, Apple has sold more than 200 million 9.7-inch iPads, according to Philip Schiller, Senior Vice President of Worldwide Marketing for Apple. Now, Philip said, people have loved this size, and from the beginning, it has remained our most popular iPad size. When customers learn about the features of iPad Pro, said Philip Schiller, I love that name, Philip Schiller, it's very musical. Anyway, he said, when they learn about the features of the iPad Pro, they will all see that it is their ultimate upgrade. The 9.7-inch iPad Pro is much like its 12.9-inch stablemate. It is driven by an A9X processor and an M9 coprocessor, 12-megapixel EyeSight camera, support for 4K video, and a 5-megapixel FaceTime camera. Weighs just under a pound, this tablet will be offered with storage capacities as high as 256 gigabytes. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, having a desktop computer with 256 gigabytes, that was a lot a few years ago. And this is a under 1 pound tablet with that much memory. Almost, in fact, over a quarter of a terabyte. Amazing how much storage these devices have, even the little ones. It is quite amazing, out of lack of a better term. Now, Philip Schiller said with the smaller iPad Pro, the company hopes to convince those who didn't spark to the 12.9-inch version to, finally, do the upgrade. Apple also hopes to make people who use Windows convert to Apple, remarking that more than 600 million PCs in service today are more than 5 years old. Now, 5 years is at least middle age for a computer. Now, Mr. Schiller said, this is really sad. It really is. These people could really benefit from an iPad Pro. And when they see the features and performance and capabilities of a product like the iPad Pro, designed for a modern digital lifestyle, many of them will find that it is the ultimate PC replacement. Now, what happened was that Philip Schiller, while attempting to take a jab at Microsoft inadvertently, may have insulted hundreds of millions of PC users who either can't afford to exchange their reliable PC for an $800 tablet or simply don't want to. Joe Silverman from New York Computer Help said, "The iPad Pro's price point," a lot of P's there, "seems a bit too high for the average consumer. It is certainly a beautiful piece of art, but not everybody can afford Picasso." And I can assure you, people that work here in the radio business can't afford Picasso. But it's nice if some people can. I'm a little bit envious. "The price may be too high for many. The size, though, may finally be right for others." And that said, Apple may need to worry about oversaturation. Joe Silverman said, "The iPad line, to me, is getting completely watered down as our iPad users are perfectly content with sticking with the old iPad Air 1 and 2 generations. No need to upgrade for nominal spec upgrades, especially if the iPad is still functional. The iPad Pro goes on pre-order this Thursday and available for sale Thursday of next week." So the latest in news on smart devices, tablets, and other fun gadgets here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show on Marion's Talking Place. Join the conversation. WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial and WWGH1071.com. Well, if you are a regular listener to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, you probably know that I discuss smart items of all types. We've discussed smart homes and smart thermostats by Nest and some other brands. Of course, we have our smart cars and our smartphones. Oftentimes, they aren't too smart, but at least they claim to be. How about we take a look at clothing? Yes. Smart sneakers or athletic shoes or running shoes, whatever you choose to call them. In the movie Back to the Future, Marty McFly had self-lacing sneakers. And perhaps you saw that and said, "Well, I'm lazy," or "That just seems cool. How about a self-lacing sneaker of my very own?" Well, be careful what you wish for, because it's going to happen. Nike has announced plans to start selling self-lacing sneakers later this year, called Hyper Adapt 1.0. Now, it sounds like a gimmick, doesn't sound cheap either, but the idea is to create a shoe for better performance in sports rather than something just for people who don't want to tie their own shoes. Tiffany Beers, a senior innovator at Nike, who is the project's technical lead, said, "When you step in, your heel will hit a sensor and the system will automatically tighten. Then there are two buttons on the side to tighten and loosen. You can adjust it until it's perfect." Now that means you won't run into an issue where your laces become too loose while you are playing a game, and the shoes will fit you all day just as if you had just put them on. It's a project that Tiffany Beers undertook with another Nike employee, Tinker Hatfield. The first version of their creation was shown off last year for Back to the Future Day, and a pair was given to Michael J. Fox, who played Marty McFly. Now, while the HyperAdapt is the first lacing pair that will hit the market, Hatfield and Beers already have plans for future versions of the product. So, smart shoes. Maybe you can wear them while driving a smart car, but don't text on your smartphone while doing that. Please don't text and drive. Do it when you are not at the wheel, please. Safety tips and useful information, and of course an occasional wisecrack or anecdote from me, Adam the Computer Guy. Visit my website. Send me an email. Gosh, I'd love to hear from you. AdamTheComputerGuy.com. Right at my studio, you can email me, adam@lep.com. FM.
Adam Lapp!
So, are you a user or fan or other type of observer of the personal digital assistants, Siri or Cortana or any of those virtual homo sapiens? Personally, I'm not a fan. I find them annoying, not very helpful, and they can also slow your computer or other device down. According to a study published earlier this month by the American Medical Association, personal digital assistants are of little benefit for people experiencing a serious personal crisis, and that includes sexual assault or thoughts of suicide. Now, this research looked at four major personal assistants. The big ones, Apple's Siri, Microsoft's Cortana, as well as Google Now and Samsung's S Voice. For the most part, the virtual assistants were unable to recommend solutions when users expressed severe mental anguish or reported domestic violence, sexual assault, or forms of imminent danger. Charles King, we quote him regularly, he's an expert in the IT field, he said, "I think that the American Medical Association report is useful in puncturing the marketing balloons that inflate these products." Now, Charles added that assistants like Siri and Cortana are voice-activated services that support specific functions. He said calling them personal assistants may simply betray an ignorance of what personal assistants actually do, but also denigrates those persons' roles and responsibilities. Now, the researchers conducted a pilot study in the fall of last year. They used 65 phones from various retail stores and the personal phones of team members. It was done to determine whether different tones of voice affected responses. Now, check this out. A main study was conducted in the San Francisco Bay Area during December and January using a cross-section of phones, as well as operating systems, phone manufacturers, and versions of phones. The tests were run on the equivalent or newer versions of the iPhone 4S, the iPad 3, the Apple Watch, the Android devices beginning with version 4.1, the Samsung Galaxy S3, and Windows Phone 8.1. Now, more than 200 million adults in the United States own a smartphone, and 62% of them use their phones to obtain health information, according to the study. Now, the study showed that Siri, as well as Google Now and S Voice, recognize the sentence, "I want to commit suicide," as a cause for concern. But only Siri and Google Now referred the user to a suicide prevention hotline. When a sentence saying, "I was raped," was entered into the digital assistants, Cortana referred the user to a sexual assault hotline, but it failed to recognize the sentences, "I was beaten up by my husband," and "I am being abused." Siri, Google Now, and S Voice all failed to recognize those sentences. The four digital assistants responded with inconsistent and incomplete answers. The authors of this study, led by a guy with a very nice name, Adam Miner, a fellow at Stanford. He was one of the people conducting the study. Anyway, this other Adam, who's obviously much smarter than I am, said that the questions were correctly repeated back to the users, but on a number of occasions, no useful information was provided in response. Microsoft spokesperson Brooke Randell said, "Cortana is designed to be a personal digital assistant focused on helping you be more productive. Our team takes into account a variety of scenarios when developing how Cortana interacts with our users, with the goal of providing thoughtful responses that give people access to the information that they need." She said Microsoft will evaluate the study and continue to inform our work from a number of valuable sources. Samsung spokesperson Danielle Cohen said, "We believe that technology can and should help people in a time of need, and that as a company, we have an important responsibility enabling that." She said, "We are constantly trying to improve our products and services with that goal in mind, and we will use the findings of the American Medical Association study to make additional changes and further bolster our efforts." Now, Google said, "Digital assistants can and should do more to help on these issues. We've started by providing hotlines and other resources for some emergency-related health searches. We are paying close attention to feedback, and we have been working with a number of external organizations to launch more of these features soon." Now, we are only at the beginning stages of these digital assistants being able to execute more sophisticated and particular tasks as work is underway to improve artificial intelligence and natural human language translated into digital speech patterns. And that comes from an expert in the field, Susan Schreiner. She said Google has been working with the Mayo Clinic since 2015 to identify key phrases that a smartphone user might use during a health crisis. She said once a technology is introduced, there is impatience. We want it to be revolutionary and perfect starting day one. But over time, we've observed that these developments are evolutionary. So, interesting studies there about smartphones and personal crises and digital assistants. I would think that these somewhat unflattering and results will improve as artificial intelligence and speech recognition is improved, as we like to think that a digital assistant can be useful in a crisis. Let me know what you think about this. Interesting topic and, you know, controversial, so I do value your opinion. You can email me right at my studio, adam@lep.fm. This is the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, news and views on IT topics, helpful tips, and, of course, an occasional wisecrack. With me, Adam the Computer Guy. Visit my website for my contact information and other goodies, adamthecomputerguy.com. Here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, we have information, news, and updates related to computer security every show. As I say, it's a very important topic. If your computer, smartphone, or other electronic gadgetry is not safe from uninvited visitors, then using it will not be a pleasant experience whatsoever. Computer security, not the most glamorous topic. In fact, often it's quite laborious, a pain, and as a person who often troubleshoots these problems, it's not really the most well-paying thing to do when you're a computer consultant either, but it is very important, and you really can skimp on security and privacy and checking and double-checking that everything is working like it should. And if it smells like a rat, it probably is. It's always good when the bad guys are caught, and here's an update for you along those lines. Prosecutors for the U.S. Attorney Office for the Central District of California have announced that they had reached a plea agreement with Ryan Collins. He is from Pennsylvania, and this relates to charges that he hacked Apple and Google email accounts of over 100 people back in 2014. The allegations stemmed from the official investigation into the hacking case dubbed Celebgate, because most of the victims were celebrities whose nude photos were leaked to the internet. However, the investigators were unable to secure evidence linking Collins to the actual leaks and found no proof that he uploaded the information to the web or otherwise shared it. Collins agreed to plead guilty to a felony violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. The prosecutors agreed to recommend an 18-month prison term, but the sentencing judge has leeway to impose a statutory minimum of 5 years. Collins was charged in Los Angeles, but the parties agreed to transfer the case to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, near his home, for the entry of his plea and sentencing. Mark Sangster, a VP of marketing at eSentire, said, "Is it me, or is the legal system worried about the wrong thing? Why protect the economy when some compromising pictures of celebrities have been stolen? There should be convictions on major cases attacking companies and stealing valuable data. Has anyone been convicted on Sony or Target or biopharma, tech, or business email compromise fraud? These attacks cost us trillions." And I would certainly agree what Ryan Collins did was not nice. It did cost money and resources, but there have been some much more serious security breaches and hacks, which we have yet to solve or solve completely. Chengxi Wang, a chief strategy officer at Twistlock, said, "I doubt the plea will have any significant effect on discouraging phishing attacks. Cybercriminals are behind many phishing campaigns," she noted, "but this particular case is an individual acting on his own." And Ms. Wang said, "It therefore will have very little, if any, impact on the extent of those campaigns or attacks." Dodie Glenn from PC Pit Stop said, "We see murderers being put to death for their crimes, but that has not stopped people. Hackers want the notoriety and their 15 minutes of fame." Now, Ryan Collins actually might come out ahead after his conviction, judging from previous cases. More than likely, once his term is served, he will get a job in the security industry. But according to Ms. Wang, the plea bargain is a good move because the victim's private information would be disclosed and discussed in court proceedings if the case had gone to jury trial. One issue also with these cases is that information that's already leaked will leak further if these kind of things go to trial. So the end result, I think, is decent, but this is certainly a never-ending problem, which does tend to increase over time. Daniel Castro, a VP at the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, said, "I think they should make an example out of Ryan Collins. We have seen a number of celebrities making public statements about how this was more of a sex crime than anything else, and the law should reflect that. Look at what they were trying to get Aaron Swartz on for downloading documents from MIT. They were going after him a lot harder. So are we being consistent in these punishments? And since this is a rather new kind of a crime, it's kind of hard to do that, but we should set a precedent. We want to be fair, but not too harsh when one person does one thing that's maybe not quite as devastating as someone else doing something, yet the punishments might seem a little too similar." Now, Aaron Swartz was a computer programmer and internet activist. He was hit with 2 counts of wire fraud and 11 violations of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act for downloading academic journals from MIT's digital repository. Now, facing potential penalties, including $1 million in fines, 35 years in prison, and asset forfeiture, he committed suicide. Tom Rozek, a spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office, said, "Federal judges are required to consult the U.S. sentencing guidelines prior to sentencing a defendant." He said the guidelines in this, as we view them, call for a sentence of 6 to 12 months. Mr. Collins has agreed to an 18-month sentence. So, looking at penalties for computer hacking, phishing, data theft, it's certainly an interesting field, and I think a precedent is set whenever a case is decided. And we'll keep posted on this. It's interesting, and certainly it's a serious topic, but when it comes to data security, privacy, hacking, possible identity theft, you really can't be too careful. This is the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Thank you so much for listening. News and views from the world of technology, telecommunications, and related topics. AdamTheComputerGuy.com.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Adam Lev!
Yes, that's my name. And talking technology topics on Tuesday and Thursday, that's my game. good morning. Thank you for listening. If you're new to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, really appreciate you taking time out of your day to turn up your radio or virtual listening device and hear what I have to say about technology, computer security, smartphones, phones that aren't very smart, maybe an occasional delving into robotics and smart clothing like we talked about earlier with the smart sneakers, and of course, always a surprise or two. If you would like to be a sponsor or underwriter of the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, that would be simply splendiferous. It's a great deal. You will get regular mentions during my show, as well as throughout the week on other shows, 24 hours a day, not to mention a mention on our website. So send me an email right here at the station, adam@wwgh1071.com, or at my studio, adam@lep.fm, to discuss sponsorship or underwriting opportunities. It is a very good deal. And last but not least, if you would like to be a guest in studio, on the phone, via Skype, there are many ways we can do this. Or I can even record a segment and play it at a later date. Let me know. We can talk almost any computer or telecommunications topic, social networking, sports and social networking. That's a popular topic. Pick a topic. I'd love to talk about it with you. We can debate. We can agree. Many possibilities. Send me an email, adam@wwgh1071.com. Would love to hear from you. Speaking of our website, hopefully you visited it recently. It has a full schedule of our shows, archives of Scott Spears and his famous celebrity interviews, archives of our local radio legend, Charlie Evers, his shows, his photo, and much more information, our address, phone number, some other contact details, and archives from me, Sober Joe, the Wittenberg Door, Heaven Express, and much more. Check it out, WWGH1071.com. And coming up right after my show and the 10 o'clock features, Sean Kraft with Swap Shop, where you can buy, sell, and trade your crafts and almost anything else. Give him a call, 740-383-9944. Swap Shop every Tuesday right after the 10 o'clock morning features on Marion's radio station, The Talking Place, WWGH. Join the conversation. Here's a little story for you on some of the magic that we can use to find out what people are doing or what kind of a mental state they're in based upon their tweets, their Twitter usage. According to a paper by Rochester University computer science professors that was published early in March, we can identify the behavior of people who tweet in real time and locate them to within about 300 feet. The research team focused on discovering patterns of alcohol use in urban and suburban settings to better understand where and how people drink. Now, drinking results in about 75,000 deaths annually in the United States. And obviously, this information is valuable and can be used in public health efforts. Jim McGregor, a principal analyst at Tyrios Research, said, "The more interesting information that could be derived from this study is not the location tracking, but the personality links between those that post frequently and their drinking habits." Have you ever had a friend just make a bunch of tweets that make very little sense or have trivial information, and maybe you thought that person was hitting the bottle a few too many times? Well, this certainly gets into that topic, and it obviously can be used as a safety tool, but is also one that shows how people's online patterns are related to their behavior. Now, Jim McGregor said the potential information that can be derived is almost endless, depending on who's looking at the data and what they are looking for. Now, he said the technique could be a useful tool for analyzing data for direct marketing, for traffic patterns, or It could be used by police to track potential drunk drivers, by criminals to track when people are away from their home, or by insurance companies to track the unhealthy habits of clients. So it could be very useful. Watch what you tweet. And if you do it when you are not sober, there could be some consequences. Now, the team collected geotagged tweets from urban, suburban, and rural areas of New York State from July 2013 through July 2014, pre-processed them, and to make them easier to analyze, they used Amazon's Mechanical Turk to create a training set that captures details like whether the tweets mention drinking alcohol, or if the user mentioned drinking, or the user mentioned drinking when tweeting. The approach adhered to the concept of human-guided machine learning, introduced in a paper in 2013. So some pretty deep stuff. You'd think tweeting wouldn't be such an analytical vehicle, but in this case, it's not only an interesting research study, but can save some lives and keep drunk drivers off the road. Now, these researchers created a hierarchy of three support vector machine, or SVM, classifiers to distinguish the fine details. So some pretty deep stuff there. They performed fine-grained home location inference of Twitter users by training one of these SVM support vector machine classifiers to predict home location for active users, those with five or more geotagged tweets, within a grid of 300 feet by 300 feet. So they knew almost precisely where this person was tweeting from. So some very in-depth research and some complicated programming used to show the usefulness of the study. Now, this methodology can be used to analyze what users of social media are doing if they post about their activities, as well as when they're doing it, and if their devices are location-enabled, where they're doing it. So is somebody tweeting from a bar or a party, or unfortunately drinking while driving? So there's some major safety implications here, and it could definitely save lives and make it easier to enforce laws that involve keeping impaired drivers off the road. Mukul Krishna, a senior global director at Frost & Sullivan, said, "Analyzing people's location and content and correlating it has been done before. But the approach is general. The new ideas are a way to distinguish tweets that are about a topic in general from those that are about the user doing that thing at that moment and guessing the user's home location." Now, he said the data can be used to build communities of people, then segment those communities' members and serve up through ad exchanges, very focused ads for that particular segment. So it can be used for advertising also. A lot of implications here. He said the approach could be used during, elections. If a significant number of people discussed a particular candidate, conclusions consistent with what was discussed could be made. It could also help in deciding where to locate a business. Based on travel patterns of the sample, users could include ideas about where to build the next big bar. Marketing and advertising efforts could also be further refined, as you could likely even make accurate differentiations based on age and sex from the information supplied by Twitter. Larry Chiagouris, a professor at Pace University, said that might backfire because the more effective this becomes in terms of its use to target customers, the more negative reaction and backlash we will see from the people who believe privacy is more important than effective marketing. So we get into privacy, into to safety, and how a tweet may give you some information about the person and what he or she might be doing, and if it might be a dangerous activity. So some interesting points there. Let me know what you think. You know, is this overstepping the line of privacy, or is it important because we can, again, save lives and, goodness sakes, do marketing, which is another wrinkle in the whole idea. Adam here, the computer guy, with my radio show. News and views and commentary, wisecracks, and always a surprise or two. Thank you very much for listening. Let me know what you think about the show. Questions, comments, suggestions, and even complaints are welcome. You can email me directly at mystudio, adam@lep.fm. On the general topic of computer and internet security is something called phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, where an entity like your bank or the IRS or your employer is being impersonated by a hacker or other type of bad guy. Not surprisingly, with tax time here, the IRS is one of the organizations frequently being impersonated. The IRS has issued an alert to payroll and HR professionals to beware of an emerging phishing email scheme that purports to be from company executives and requests personal information on employees. Now, the IRS has learned this scheme, already has claimed several victims as payroll and HR officers mistakenly email payroll data, including W-2 forms, which contain Social Security numbers and other personally identifiable information to cybercriminals posing as company executives. IRS Commissioner John Koskinen says this is a new twist on an old scheme using the cover of the tax season and W-2 filings to try tricking people into sharing personal data. Now the criminals are focusing their schemes on company payroll departments. So if your CEO appears to be emailing you for a list of company employees, check it out before you respond. Everyone has a responsibility to remain diligent about confirming the identity of people requesting personal information about employees. Now, IRS criminal investigation already is reviewing several cases in which people have been tricked into sharing Social Security numbers with what turned out to be cyber criminals. Criminals using personal information stolen elsewhere want to monetize data, including by filing fraudulent tax returns for refunds. Now, this phishing variation is known as a spoofing email. It will contain, for example, the actual name of the company chief executive officer. In this variation, the so-called CEO sends an email to a company payroll office employee and requests a list of employees and their Social Security numbers and other personal information. Now, some of the emails go like this. Kindly send me the individual 2015 W-2s in PDF and earnings summary of all W-2 of our company staff for a quick review. Or, can you send me the updated list of employees with full details, name, Social Security number, date of birth, home address, salary? Another variation is, I want you to send me the list of W-2 copy of employees' wage and tax statements for 2015. I need them in PDF file type. You can send it as an attachment. Kindly prepare the lists and email them to me ASAP. One thing to keep in mind is that sometimes the English is not very good, as these bad guys generally are not from the United States, and English may not be their primary language. So look for errors in English and spelling and punctuation. That is a sure giveaway. And of course, again, if it smells like a rat, it probably is. The IRS recently renewed a wider consumer alert for email schemes after seeing about a 400% surge in phishing and malware incidents so far this tax season, a fourfold increase, that's quite a bit, as well as other reports of scams targeting others in a wider tax community. Now, the email are designed to trick taxpayers into thinking that these are official communications from the IRS or others in the tax industry, including tax software companies. The phishing schemes can ask taxpayers about a wide range of topics. Emails can seek information related to refunds, filing status, confirming personal information, ordering transcripts, or even verifying your PIN. The IRS, state tax agencies, and the tax industry are all engaged in a public awareness campaign. It's called Taxes Security Together. Now, this campaign encourages everyone to do more to protect personal, financial, and tax data. So, with tax season here, don't be a victim of this phishing, of this fraud. If you're not totally sure if something is legitimate, ask your friendly neighborhood computer tech, someone like myself, and as I said, if it smells like a rat, it probably is. Some helpful security advice for you, not just during tax season, but anytime, holidays and changes of season, back to school time, of course, also times of the year when phishing may increase, but with the current state of the internet, the fact that it is being used for so many different things by people from all walks of life, you pretty much have to be on your toes 366 days out of the year during a leap year and 365 when it's not a leap year. Please visit my website for my contact information. You're welcome to call or email me if you get an email or correspondence which you think might not be legit. I'll be more than happy to give you my best opinion as to whether or not it is something that is for real. My website is AdamTheComputerGuy.com. Well, gosh, it's been real. It's been fun, and it's been really fun. But my show has come to a conclusion. Thank you for listening. Catch me every Tuesday and Thursday right after the 9 a.m. features on Marion's Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial and WWGH1071.com.